You lied to me. I'm gonna kill that son of a bitch. I'm no fool. You think I didn't know? Where are you going?
Can't you hear him? He's hurt. I've got to find him.
I don't want you to go.
You're jealous of an animal?
I'm going to kill him, Tanya.
I'm warning you, Lobo. If you try, I'll never come back here again.
I don't want you back. You hear? Don't come back here.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
If I had a body people wanted to see, I'd walk around naked all the time, too.
And I can feel something in the force. I can feel something, a presence I haven't felt in a very long time. A hate. A seething hate. Yes, that must be Angry Trish.
Yes. Okay, out the gate, here's my recommendation. We burn it. We burn it and do something else.
Well, poor Jennifer Miller, who recommended this as a fan challenge. We're going to be doing Tanya's Island today from 1980. And yeah, Trish, this is one of her favorite films.
It's, oh, we need to have a talk.
Just look at all of the terrible movies we've done and watch them. They are better than this movie.
Yes. You know what? I will watch Hard Rock Zombies on a fucking loop before I watch this movie again.
But you know what? That could be like a favorite movie, is she recognizes how bad this is. At least I hope she does. I mean, this is exploitation, Canucksploitation movie. It is a Canadian exploitation movie, which I kind of dig. We kind of never done anything like that before. We probably will never do one again.
Well, to be fair, we have to, if we do Canucksploitation, we have to set it in a very warm island because we can't be naked that much.
So very true.
Yeah, so that's why we had to do it like this. Yeah, Canucksploitation isn't a thing because it's just people would die of hypothermia.
Yeah, I'm assuming if she's like running around naked all the time on the island, it's like, well, there's nobody else around. Sure, but you know, have his dong flopping around too.
Exactly.
Equal level there, because we were getting full frontals. Full backles.
Yeah.
Full all of this.
They did the whole James Bond thing at the beginning there with just sort of like really focusing on her naked body.
Yeah.
The opening credits.
Yeah. I don't mind nudity. I mean, let's face it, I enjoy nudity, but it served no purpose in this movie.
No.
That would be the first thing I get rid of, because it was just a weird erotic drama, I imagine.
There was nothing erotic about it.
That's just it. Like, when we looked it up, like, some places were calling this a softcore porn movie. Like, I wouldn't say that it was even that, because at least softcore porn movies are titillating. Not that vanity isn't worth looking at, but.
No objections to the casting choice for that. It's just in the 80s, I mean, gratuitous nudity and exploitation nudity was very popular, and I'm certainly would have really, really enjoyed this as a teenage boy.
Yeah, the Blue Lagoon had a whole thing like that too.
Yes.
Yeah, there was definitely some of that stuff kicking around, and this feels like, I don't know, Canadian funded grindhouse movie, because it.
Yes.
I mean, it's certainly the quality of the filmmaking and everything else felt very low budget grindhousey, which is weird because like the cinematographer and stuff have gone on to better things, but man, there were times like, oh shit, I'm seeing those rounded corners on the barrel of the lens. It's like, oh God, you didn't even know how to use your lenses.
Or if you did it deliberately, you did it very poorly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kept telling myself this is like a dream, and it does end up being a dream. And that's the only way I could justify it in my head and keep watching for some of that bad look.
It makes up for some of the nonsensical stuff you're watching. It's like, well, it's got to be a dream, a fever dream of that.
Right?
Yeah, because it's so lacking in continuity. Like right from the get-go, I mean, you start with her running.
Mm-hmm.
For no purpose.
No purpose.
Then they kind of set her up as an actress model, but then that goes away, and then they kind of established the relationship between her and Lobo, but then that goes away. Now she's packing a bag, and then all of a sudden she walks into that room with all the lanterns, and then she's on an island.
Yeah. Well, I kept thinking...
Oh, she gets that glowing...
Yeah.
It's, yeah. There's enough there. Like, okay, with the running, I just assumed, like, it shows that she's distracted because she runs into that dude. I think that was the purpose of that. I don't know why, but if they had interconnected that with her being in her head and remembering the day's abuse with Lobo, this artist that she's been dating, then maybe that would have worked better. But they kept doing those scenes individually, and when she's on set, she's looking at the TVs and stuff that kind of inspire her dream, which was Mighty Joe Young, by the way.
which we've done.
And that inspires the dream. But when she's on set and then it suddenly we're moving to that, I like that memory of the day's abuse, or we're just cutting that's when it happens. I'm not even sure
exactly.
But the acting was so piss poor that I thought they were acting to look like they're acting. And I'm like, no, that's just how the movie's going to be. It's just that bad.
And it mostly was. There. Every once in a while, you could see the actress that Vanity / Dee Dee Winters, I think her credit was in this one, was going to become. She was never a great actress, but she was certainly more competent than this movie in her later roles.
Yeah. Like, you know what? It's weird. We talk about the nudity is a very big part of this film, but you know, I probably wouldn't have minded. There's one moment where it makes sense to me where she's just out swimming.
Yes.
And then she comes out of the ocean. Mm. And I'm like going in that moment, I felt like, no, she's not naked for being naked sake. She doesn't have a bathing suit and they're on an island. And she's just like, well, you know, this is just how I'm going swimming. It was very, it didn't feel as titillating in that moment.
It felt organic. It felt like something that somebody would actually do. And that's fine. And I mean, to be fair, she was largely wearing clothes. They were just really loose fitting. So she poked out quite a bit. Right? So, I mean, even that wasn't so bad. The only spots where it was really sort of excessive was the opening sequence. Mm-hmm. And then there were a few moments there where he got a little aggressive with her, where it's like, okay, well, that's something else entirely.
Which is weird. That's what they do. Pull back on the nudity actually during the more aggressive scenes and the rape scenes.
Because they didn't want to sexualize
it. It is there, but usually the loose fitting clothing is kind of hiding, or they're doing it in shadow. So yes, you're right. They are trying to not eroticize a rape scene, and as well, you shouldn't.
No, but I think they, in some ways, they kind of were. Like, it felt just, it was too long. It was too focused.
Yeah, they spent too long on that. But they were trying to pad out a movie that had not much going for it. So
yeah,
everything felt way too long.
Yeah, and I just almost wonder if the writer of this film, who only has two credits, and I think these were self-indulgent productions on his part.
Pierre Brossu.
Yes, I think that he had some really interesting ideas that they just weren't able to translate to film for him, and it ended up being this mess.
I'm wondering if there's the same amount of nudity in Après-Ski.
I wouldn't be
not
surprised.
Not that I'll ever watch it.
Ditto. But yeah, I don't know if maybe he was giving his audience more credit than they deserved as well, or maybe the film just didn't translate what he was thinking particularly well.
Yeah, I mean, this may not have been a stepping stone for him into the business, but it was for other people. Director Alfred Sole, but even before this, had directed Alice Sweet Alice, which is a little cult horror, Canadian horror movie, at least cult now. Probably wasn't a success then, but he's gone on to do lots of television, Canadian television specifically. Lots of episodes of Castle he directed, and most recently the revived MacGyver series. So, I mean, he's been busy. The cinematographer has been very busy, and this movie bafflingly had a $1.4 million budget. I'm like, really? It looks like about 150 grand, except for that gorilla. I'm guessing the entire budget went to that gorilla.
And travel. Oh,
and travel.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, thanks, Sam. I was saying, like, to get all the equipment and stuff to the island.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah, Blue, the gorilla character, looks amazing. I mean, by far the best-looking part of the whole film.
Oh, yeah. The special effects of this movie, just mind-bogglingly, are Rick Baker and Rob Bottin.
And I'm still wondering how the fuck they got them.
Yes. I mean, and to put this into perspective, Rick Baker was working on Empire Strikes Back at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's not like he needed to do a little shit show like this. This is contributing to when we talked about him being sick of doing gorillas, but he did Mighty Joe Young, I do believe, and he did the King Kong remake as well.
He did, yeah, and those were all after this, but...
Yeah.
Speaking of getting sick of doing gorillas, the guy who played Blue made a career playing gorilla.
Yeah, his entire career. Almost his entire career. I mean, in fact, we've actually covered one of those appearances on the show, but way back in episode 68.
In Trading Places, no kidding. That was hilarious, is that the fake gorilla that raped the fake gorilla was played by the same guy who raped a character in this movie.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was on purpose.
You know, it could be. I mean, a throwback to a really terrible film that started a guy's career as a gorilla.
Maybe.
I was like looking at most of his career were playing gorillas. Wow. Crazy. I didn't know that was a good career choice, but it apparently was. It kept him working.
Andy Serkis.
I was about to say. These days, there are still guys that are, and I have one in my casting, so.
Yeah, I'll not say I didn't even think about it, but I'm going to just go at Andy Serkis because, well, he does do it well. But but I will say that he does do a really good job of capturing sort of some of the head and shoulder motion of the gorillas. The walk, not so much, but that sort of simian motion in the head and shoulders. He did a good job of that.
I'm sure he got better over time having played it over and over and over again.
I'm sure. I mean, even in Trading Places, his performance was pretty believable. Certainly more believable than Jim Belushi's.
Well, to be fair, he wasn't supposed to be a believable gorilla.
To be fair.
Yeah, well, it's those people who are good at that movement are really, like, yeah, with the gorilla scenes with Blue, I actually didn't mind those so much. I liked watching him move.
Yeah, well, and I mean, the animatronic facial features and stuff were really good. Mm-hmm.
Entire budget.
Yeah, right. Must be. All right, let's run this trailer. It'll tell you pretty much all you need to know about this movie, so thankfully you'll never actually have to watch it like we did.
Once upon a time, there was a man, a woman, and a beast. On Tanya's island, adrift in a tropical paradise, where fantasy and reality blend. Two lovers find heaven and hell. A love so rare, a summer affair. Tanya, a young actress, alone on an enchanted island. With her lover, Lobo, an artist. Alone, he thinks. Deep in the tropical rainforest, some mysterious inner urge draws Tanya toward the source of her strange obsession. Tanya finds the secret the island holds. A beast who fills her with fear and fascination. The beast who becomes her friend.
You don't want to hurt me, do you?
The days drift through dreamy depths.
You make me feel like an animal.
Jealousy rears its ugly head. Jealousy in the mind of man. Jealousy in the heart of the beast. Tanya's lover resorts to brute force to reclaim his woman. The beast wants his mate. The animal in man. The humanity in the beast. Which is stronger? Tanya's sensuality is strongest of all. Compelling. Irresistible. The beast follows his nature. And his Tanya. Fantasy and reality meet on Tanya's Island.
Okay, that was Tanya's Island from 1980. As a fan challenge from Jennifer Miller, this is written by Pierre Brossou. As I said, who wrote Après Ski. Go find out for yourselves. Directed by Alfred Soul, who I mentioned has got a pretty good TV resume as well. Starring Denise Catherine Matthews, otherwise known as Vanity, as Tanya, Richard Sargent as Lobo, who mainly is a Canadian TV star. Mariette Levesque had a brief appearance as a character named Kelly, worked on the movie set that Tanya worked on. She was also in Après Ski.
Oh, my.
I know, right?
You're having too much fun saying that, Jay. Do it again.
Après Ski. Don McLeod played Blue, who's played many a gorilla, as we mentioned, episode 68, when we mentioned the gorilla in Trading Places. He was also in The Howling. And Donnie Burns was the actual voice of Blue. Lots of animation voice work and another Canadian and animation classic, Rock and Rule. You remember that one, Sam?
I do. Yeah, I saw that. I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Vanity's most probably famous for her hit Nasty Girl, which was in lots of movies, and Dating Prince. I think that was her more famous than her acting roles. And it's unfortunate when I was watching this movie, I'm like, okay, this movie really is about the nature of abuse. Mm-hmm. Her being this submissive actress and the escalation of that abuse. And unfortunately, I felt like it mirrored a lot of her own life as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the end, it almost foreshadowed a lot of what happened in her own life for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's unfortunate because you're right, Jay. This had an opportunity to be a really good commentary on the nature of being in an abusive relationship and healing from that and moving beyond the cycle of being in abusive relationships. And it felt like they were going there, but they never quite got there.
No, basically they went to the whole point where it was basically Blue and Lobo fighting over her for the last bit the entire time.
This is an inquisitive gorilla on Fantasy Island.
Yeah. And I mean, it could have been, like you say, it could have been a big commentary. Like, I mean, being trapped on an island, like part of abuse is to isolate your victim. And this would be a great allegory for that whole experience.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I want to go, as I would really love to go there to make what's the bones of what could have been a good film into a good film. Because Blue would have been really a sort of great representation of the opposite of Lobo, right? And he almost is, but then they end it with such a horrible right? scene.
Oh yeah. When the gorilla itself just turns into Lobo. The way this movie progresses as Lobo gets more jealous of her spending time with his animal, which is probably why they were on the island in the first place, because he had such jealous tendencies. He's even jealous of a gorilla. But as that jealousy ate away at him more and more, he becomes more aggressive and more animalistic. And they do some interesting subtle stuff to make that work in his physical actions.
the body paint,
mm-hmm. eating bananas. He becomes more animalistic, and we do see the gorilla get a little more humanized, but when the gorilla gets rejected, it reverts instantly to a savage state and beats her and rapes her to death.
Yeah.
Which is when she wakes up from her dream.
Yeah. And there's no resolution. And that was, I think, part of the problem with this film is there's no resolution at all. It's like, okay, she gets raped, she wakes up, and then it ends.
Yeah. Were you mad when you saw the scratches on her? I was like, fuck you.
Yeah,
fuck you hard.
I told you the end made me mad, and I told you it was going to make you mad.
I was mad at the beginning when I saw the barrel of the camera lens, but that was much worse.
I knew the ending was going to be one of your oh fuck you moments because it was my reaction too.
Yeah. I literally wrote it down. Fuck you.
Yeah, because we've had these before where you know the ending's coming like that, and even when it happens, you're like, I wish you'd surprised me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they didn't.
Oh, the noises that came out of my mouth at that ending.
No, I do want to.
Disgusted.
They couldn't even set dress her fucking apartment. It was a mattress on a floor.
Yeah.
In this empty apartment building. Like, what the fuck? Like, you literally had no budget. Everything went to the gorilla because they literally couldn't dress sets.
I would have had an interesting moment with that. Like, yeah, it is an undressed apartment, but maybe she's just left that abusive relationship and that's all she has.
And that's what she should, they should have done that. Should have seen her packing up, and this dream was a manifestation of all the actions she did. And instead of seeing the scratches, it should have been the room full of boxes going, time to start again. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I think that would have worked much better. I think that's, I think that's what he was trying to do. I really do. But it just wasn't handled at all well.
No.
Right. And there were parts there where that undid it. Because that first part on the island set it up really nicely. Right. Mm-hmm. Aside from the bad acting and the bad film work and all that stuff. But story wise, it did set it up quite nicely. But one thing I would change, I think, is the first scene where you see Lobo, where she goes to him to beg him to take her back, and then that's certainly a sign of being sort of tied to that isolation and abusive relationship, right? But there's also that bit where it's her who's jealous because she's mad because she thinks he's going back to his girlfriend before her. Mm-hmm. She actually says, "You're going back to her, aren't you?" Another thing that kind of undoes what the first part of the time on the island seems to convey.
Yeah. And the whole thing too is I think they really missed a golden opportunity with Blue itself, because thinking about it, if only it had been like Blue isn't quite real. Blue is her strength, her ability to leave, her ability to stand up for herself. That's who Blue is. And that's sort of why Lobo wants to destroy him. And when she kind of leaves, that's the whole thing. Like Blue kills Lobo. Just let's have that happen. Cause I kind of was like, I'm done with Lobo now.
I almost feel like there should have been another character, as this dream happens consistently over several nights and maybe even weeks or months, because probably bring that home. As much as I don't like spoon feeding an audience, maybe this is where that happens naturally, as her in her real life and these dreams are sorting out something in her head that she hasn't been able to come to terms with consciously.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Yes.
Yeah, I think I like that. And I think, that would be certainly probably the best way to approach it. Cause I was thinking is you'd set it up so that it's more of almost like a Shutter Island thing where you don't know that she's in her own head. I mean, they set it up the way they in the beginning of this movie, that you know that this is a fantasy world for her.
Actually, I kind of like that too. And you can use the therapist stuff at the end, so you don't have any of that actor setup stuff. I mean, it was pointless. Who gives a shit if she's an actress or a fucking waitress? Doesn't really matter. They do a shit job establishing it. It's really there to set up the elements of the dream. Well, you can have that at the end if you want. It doesn't need to be at the beginning.
And
it can be subtly around her.
Yeah.
All it does is set up a what the fuck, how the hell did they get to the island moment, and it completely undoes the fact that it's a fantasy, because you already know that she's somewhere else dealing with a damaged relationship.
And she's alone. She has no support group, no support effort. So she's trying to find her own little niche on this island rather than just being this lonely painter's girlfriend fuck buddy.
And I think you could establish the sort of systemic abuse in the relationship through dialogue on the island. They can talk about how this trip to the island is really helping their relationship, and she's noticed that he's been kinder to her. Like little things like that would make it a lot more, like establish the relationship a lot better than what they did.
Yeah. And as we're talking about like the isolation too, when you have like those little moments, like the pig, you could have like sort of, he brings the pig to her, but it could be that friend that he introduced her to because he likes controlling that part of her life.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the fact that Blue killed the pig seemed a little out of character and a little disturbing to be occurring that early in the film.
Yeah, that confused me.
It didn't make any sense in terms of the narrative.
Yeah, the way I see that is, and I mean, it makes no sense, but Blue being jealous because the pig was supposed to be a surrogate child for Lobo and Tanya, and it wasn't Blue's. That's the only explanation I have for that scene. And I don't know if that's what they was going for or not. I didn't make a lot of sense to me either because gorillas are herbivores.
Yeah.
No, it made no sense. And it didn't, especially if we go with the way that Trish has really well laid out, actually, is that is the gorilla or Blue represents her strength that's been repressed for so long.
I kind of like the idea of like, okay, Rick Baker, also in 1980, was not just Empire, was also working on Altered States. Why can't we have some fucked up shit in there? Like, we could get into some psychedelic stuff where this surrogate pig, like, we have a fever dream that maybe she gave birth to the pig.
Ooh.
It makes no sense, but if the movie's not going to make any sense, let's embrace the fucking weird.
Well, you might as well.
And make it seem like have dream logic, that shit that doesn't make sense and it tips you off.
Yeah.
That this is, something isn't right here. I mean, something majorly isn't right here.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I could get behind that. I did want to mention that the pig, and specifically the pig head and the fortress, very, very much owes itself to Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, were you upset when they named it Sam?
I fucking give a shit.
You know what? I might
They kill Sams a lot in movies.
They actually do. Well, no, Lord of the Rings, Sam is a pretty big hero in it.
There are some exceptions, but yeah, there's a lot of dead Sams in movies.
Yeah, or your mentally disabled Sean Penns.
Yep.
But is this make me a weird person? When he was first capturing the pig, my whole thought was like that he was capturing it to eat it.
I thought so too.
I just thought he was hunting.
Yeah.
They're trying to establish that they're self-sufficient on this island somehow, which in and of itself is a little bit confusing. Like, because there's that whole how did they get there thing, right? Yeah.
Well, if he's an artist, who's he fucking selling his paintings to?
Right?
Like, what's he there for? If this is an inspiration, where are your paintings instead of this mural on this house you can't do anything with? And they're all gorillas, by the way.
Yes. No foreshadowing there at all.
No. It's like, ah. None of this makes sense. So you haven't seen a gorilla, but you're drawing gorillas all over this hut. And then you're like, I've run out of inspiration. So clearly they've seen gorillas, but he's run out of inspiration. So they're going to the other side of the island where there actually are gorillas that he's never seen. That didn't inspire him to do it in the first place. So when they do get one, he's not painting them.
but in way we're kind of couching this remake where Blue is representative of something, that actually works. I think him painting gorillas is indicative and it can be part of this whole fever dream thing.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, how did they get there is also another big thing. Cause I'm like, if they were stranded somehow, like, where did the horse come from?
Exactly. So you have to sort of establish that they're there voluntarily and it is a private island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say he's a reclusive and probably very famous artist and tends to get away with his eccentricities.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was leaning as well. And yeah, I mean, they have the hut they were living in is pretty modest, but if you can afford a private island, maybe they have something that's a little more villa-like. Mm-hmm. I mean, cause they keep talking about, let's go camping on the other side of the island, right? Mm-hmm. That's sort of the whole conceit of how they get over there and she meets Blue.
And he gets away with getting called Lobo. I'm sorry, but that's a terrible name.
Oh, I agree. That's one thing we
he's my favorite DC character. Come on now.
And this and he even kind of looks like him at the end of the movie.
Yeah, he does.
Oh.
Maybe this was secretly a DC Comics movie. This is the origin.
Or whoever created Lobo was a big fan of this movie.
Maybe.
He eats his entrails and thoroughly enjoys it. That's what Lobo means. Oh. At least in Zarnian.
Wow.
Yeah. No. Well, to associate these two Lobos is pretty insulting to the spacefaring Lobo on the bike.
That's what I'm saying is like, this Lobo can't be called Lobo because he's not good enough to be a Lobo.
No. No, he's definitely not cool enough. But that's probably like his street name.
His
artist persona. Name. Yeah, his artist persona.
Yeah.
Yeah, his Banksy-ish name.
Oh, maybe that's it. He's like reclusive art guy, not out for fame or whatever. He signs his stuff Lobo. It just appears out of nowhere.
You can literally lean into that, the fact that he is like a Banksy type where he is sort of the anonymous artist, right?
Yeah, but I don't know. I like Banksy. I think that redeems him a bit too much.
We could make a shitheel Banksy. This doesn't have to be a good Banksy.
Yeah, I know.
We don't know what kind of person Banksy is. He won't tell us.
It's true. But yeah, I don't know. This guy, well, with Lobo having somebody, possessing somebody, and with like a lot of abusers, it's about status and power. Mm-hmm. You would not want to be anonymous.
No, this guy would, you'd want to kind of lean into what the model of that kind of person is for sure for this character. This type of guy would want all the credit in the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even if he didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we could almost make him like spoiled rich kid who thinks he's an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right? I like that's that. why they have the money. And that kind of sort of ties into the whole abusive thing too. His life isn't going the way he exactly wanted it to.
Yeah.
So he takes it out on the person closest to him.
Oh, yes. And it just makes me think of other things we could add to like the whole how you know it's a dream, but how you can intercut everything with this. Like, say he's bought gallery space because he just can for his paintings. And all these people are kind of mocking it. And at some point in the movie, there's like monkeys throwing feces at his paintings.
Oh, I love it.
Yes.
Well, what if he's been claiming art of somebody else's for his own?
Ooh.
He has a ghost painter?
A ghost painter. And something accident, like he has to run because this guy turns up dead. And that's why he's on this island. I'm admitting I'm liberally stealing from an EC comic idea.
Yeah. It's also a little like Velvet Buzzsaw too.
Yeah, I'm almost wondering if maybe that's taking away too much from what could be a really good core concept and maybe just make it as simple as,
well,
he gets found out that he's using a ghost painter.
Yeah, I think when you have an evil, I guess he does enough that he's an evil character and you want to see him get his comeuppance. So, yeah, I guess we don't need to pile on more.
Yeah. No, we don't.
He's already a shitheel rapist.
Yeah,
because the core of the story is still really solid. Sorry,
yeah,
Trish.
And he's like a like, and I like the idea where you say like he's just a rich kid, but he's just not a very good painter.
Yeah,
and not a very good person.
Let's instead of this guy turn up. Yeah, but I would say he's paying off guys so he can claim it at his own. He has a ghost painter, and all he has to go is sign his name on the finished product.
You know, I don't know. I mean,
keep in mind, this is all a fucking dream. We can do whatever fuck we want.
We can, but I would prefer to have him be doing his own paintings poorly, and that's his motivation for taking out his abuse on Tanya, because that's...
He's not getting the recognition he wants.
He feels he deserves, and he refuses to believe that he's not a good artist.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, I saw your mural, dude. You're shit.
But that's, I think that gives, actually establishes his character really well without sort of having any sort of this any further sleaziness necessary.
Mm-hmm. Just a spoiled rich kid who's trying to become an artist and nobody sees the talent in him, which he doesn't have. He's the Ed Wood of painting.
Nice.
Yeah, but
Ed Wood came from nothing and made shit from nothing. And I mean, it was still garbage, but at least he had a passion for it.
He tried so hard. Like, there's a sincerity that's really, I appreciate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, Ed Wood was cool. This is the anti-Wood.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what you could do, again, if we're leading to this whole kind of fever dream thing where it's like basically working through all the psychology of it,
mm-hmm.
is as it progresses and he spends more time with Blue, his paintings look less good to her.
Right. Oh, I like that. I dig that.
Like she's been blinded by her like obsessive love for this abusive man.
Actually, this is great because from a cinematography standpoint, we're on this bright, lush, vibrant island. And as the abuse becomes more severe in the story, the palette, color palette changes, the background changes, the plants start to die, the clouds are start rolling and it becomes grayer and darker because the world is being manipulated by the story of this dream. It's going to affect the environment to the point, like, I wouldn't even mind seeing, like, the colors dripping off the canvas near the end where we start to realize like this is, as it becomes more and more psychedelic, then we're seeing like this idyllic world melt away into something pretty horrible.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you do so many visuals of it, like with the plants dying, but like the colors are dripping off the plants as they start to wither.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I like that.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're moving away from whatever this erotic exploitation movie is and trying to get into the mental turmoil while embracing, like, the dream aspects of it. So we're only limited by budget, really. But, I mean, we're just talking about it, so we have no budget. And nobody's ever going to remake this, let's face it. But
we've got no budget.
Yeah, we have an unlimited budget in our mental capacity. So, you know, when you think of, what was that Robin Williams movie, What Dreams May Come?
Yes.
Yeah. We could start with something that looks very familiar, Fantasy Island aspects, and have that slowly rot away as the relationship dies.
I like that. I think because you don't want to establish that it is a dream world right off the bat. You want to make sure that there's this sense of reality that slowly deteriorates into our dream world.
You don't want to establish that right away. No.
As much as I love the idea of the pig birth, I think that might undo that too early in the movie.
I don't know. I think if we stuck that kind of nearer to the end when it's that desperate bid to have a baby to fix your relationship.
Well, actually, you know, if you could do that like as one of those like dream within a dream sequences where she wakes up and it's not
nice. That's good.
Right. Because then you question, well, are they in a dream world or is she in real life or reality again? Right. Because there's nothing better than the dream within a dream to do that.
Awesome. That sounds good.
And we still get that really awesome visual that Jay was describing because it's fucking creepy.
As a lady person, having a creature in you is mental to begin with, but having a foreign creature like that coming out of you would be terrifying.
We're kind of moving into psychological horror.
I was afraid we were going to do that. No, yeah. So, I mean, you can have your moments of it, mm-hmm. I think. But I think, again, the message that could be conveyed by the story is really important, is the cycle of abusive relationships. And you don't want to take away from that too much, but you do want to find things that sort of also express the damage that those types of relationships can do to a person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason where that, I think that's actually probably more effective as a psychological horror movie. I mean, we're calling it that. That's what the term it is, but it's more than that. Like, you look at Tenya's Island and it just comes off as a softcore porn movie on the surface. I mean, there's something much deeper happening there. Unfortunately, nobody's skilled enough to pull it off.
No. Yeah, when you say softcore porn, you can find this on Pornhub, just FYI.
Oh, yeah. You can find it. No, there's a free one on YouTube of very low quality. But yeah, you'll find better quality ones on like Xhamster and stuff and Pornhub, which is ironic. We actually had to go to a porn site to watch this movie.
This is the first one I think we had to do where we had to go to a porn site.
Yeah. That's a very odd turn of events for us.
Yes.
Because, I could not find it anywhere. Well, I found it on YouTube, but I found a very low quality one. So it was all gray.
Can you imagine this is the offshoot of Invasion of the Remake. remaking of the Bone Zone. Just remaking porns just to have better stories. She's invited the plumber over, but he hasn't fixed her sink. You know what? I would feel this would make more sense is while the sink was like he was using the drain in the sink, just stuff happened. And the money shot is when he invoices her.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, reality porn at its best.
Absolutely.
But yeah, the way this progresses, we haven't even touched upon that Lobo tries to capture the gorilla, threatens to kill it, but because he does love Tanya and Tanya would never speak to him again if he did, he captures it and pokes at it, tortures it, and hopes it starves to death, and then it escapes. And then his second option is, well, if I can't cage it, I'll cage Tanya. And he puts her in a cage and builds this whole fort. And somebody along the way forgot that gorillas can climb.
Yep.
Yes.
Drove me nuts because that's like the final third of the movie is in the, with this bamboo hut thing.
Fortress. And he also forgets that gorillas are super strong.
Yeah.
Yes. That gorilla could get in that little quote-unquote fortress with no trouble at all.
Well, and it did in the end, but it was any time the gorilla came along, Lobo's poking at it through the slats and aggravating, they're trying to egg each other on. So until Tanya distracts him and then gives Blue a chance to break in. But you had a gasp. What
I
is
had
it?
A thought. Okay, so Blue starts off as not the hugest of gorillas. Like, this is, again, her inner strength, so it's tiny and small. Mm-hmm. But as she spends more time with Blue and it gets nurtured, then it becomes the powerful gorilla that can get into the fortress. It couldn't before.
Mm-hmm. I fucking love that.
That is great.
I absolutely love it.
Yes.
Yes. That is the building up of her resistance to Lobo's abuse and her confidence.
Yeah, you can see it sort of as, like, when he first gets captured, he's still small, maybe the size of a chimp. And then she rescues him, and next time you see him, he's bigger.
Yeah. But she can't reject him at the end then, which I didn't sit well with me anyway. Gorilla comes and rescues you, and then you reject it, and then the gorilla rapes you?
Yeah, that's bad.
Beats you to death? But this is all your mental thing, so you're rejecting your own strength. That makes no sense. Now, if there's an embrace and they meld into each other, because by that point, the world's we're seeing a lot of psychedelic stuff at this point anyway.
No, and that's – I was thinking exactly the same thing.
We're all on the same page. You read my brain too.
Yeah, I think there should be an embrace where she finally embraces this strength to say no more.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay, I wanted to have watched that movie.
No, we've already made it exponentially better, at least in my mind.
Yeah. I think we have as well.
I think it addresses what could have been good about this movie quite well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, going back to the little fortress hut thing, there was one scene that – for some reason, I found a little bit unsettling in a good way, is the scene where Blue is running around the outside, rattling the bars.
Yeah.
And they have it just the right length of time where it's like, okay, I can see how this would make somebody like really agitated. Like, it just worked really well. Like I said, there are those maybe three or four moments in the movie that worked really, really well for me. That was one of them. The makeup they put on Lobo as he regressed also worked really well for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the use of the lanterns. I mean, we do away with it because we've done away with that whole opening sequence. But as she walks into the room with the lanterns, and then you see the lanterns at various points throughout the rest of the film as little hints.
Nice.
Yeah, the one where she picks it up before her dream starts, the glowing triangle, which wound up being the conch shell.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there was some really great subtleties there. Like, you can tell that the director had some talent. The cinematographer had some talent, but they didn't have the tools to do it well.
Yeah, there were lots. I think they were under time constraints, certainly didn't have actors who were very solid. And clearly there was some skill and some thought put into these scenes, but there was just not enough footage shot to make this stuff coherently edited together.
Yeah.
I would like to also request that the use of wind chimes be very sparingly used.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I'm sure they were meant to symbolize something, but it was lost on me. It was utterly lost on me.
It was just, it just went on for so long. And it's kind of like, oh, this is why people hate Neighbors with Wind Chimes. I get it.
And that's where things can get more aggressive, like where you start subtly changing the sound of the chimes, where it's very pretty at the beginning. And again, as things get harsher and harsher, so does the sound of the wind chimes. It's a subtle thing that's going to start grating on the viewer. and is going to impact them on a subconscious level. So yeah, that could really work if you knew how to work it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I do like that.
Nice.
They didn't do that, but
no,
it could,
but they could have,
but they could have.
I think that the first act of the movie could be sort of establishing their relationship and showing sort of the deterioration of that relationship.
Yeah, and I don't want her to be so submissive so much as supportive of what he's trying to do.
In terms of his art and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, she's making sacrifices to be there, and she thinks she's inspiring him.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like that. And then as it deteriorates and they try to recover some of that magic by going to the other side of the island and she meets Blue, the middle act should be that relationship between her and Blue. And the relationship between Blue and Lobo, his instinctive and immediate hatred of Blue, it seemed too fast, too quickly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It made zero sense because it happens so quickly and so overtly. It's like, okay, wow, that was – it's just an ape. Like – you should be more concerned about her safety than anything else, rather than that there's this budding friendship between animal and human. But that's projecting his own insecurities, and that's another psychological thing that's in there.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you establish that he is prone to this need for ownership of her and jealousy, mm-hmm. I think that you need that to happen a little bit slower throughout the second act in order to really make it impactful.
Mm-hmm. I think it's that growing independence of hers, of finding a life on this island without him. And mm-hmm. he does say stuff like that, well, do you really need me at all?
Yeah.
And that's not the case. You know, everybody has their relationship, if they're in a relationship, has the point where they want alone time or me time. She's doing that too.
Yeah, and she's already acknowledging that there's something wrong in her relationship that she doesn't know how to fix. And that's where Blue is helping her, right? He's helping her find her peace and her strength again. And you need to sort of see that slowly progress before this, okay, I'm not doing this anymore. Either the gorilla goes or I go, right? Well, the gorilla's going would be his response because of who he is. I think mm-hmm. that you need to sort of see that progression instead of these really long, drawn out scenes that felt like this movie is like just barely an hour and a half and mm-hmm. it felt much fucking longer.
Yeah, it is. 82 arduous minutes. It's rare that we've done a movie this short that felt so long.
Yes. Right. But I think that's setting that up where there's more explanation of what's going on so you can sort of relate a little bit better to the characters will make that third act really work well.
Oh, for sure. And as you're saying, like how he responds to like Blue, part of that, like her relationship with Blue is his overreaction to it. Is also part of her noticing, oh no, there's something very wrong with this dude.
Yes. Yeah. It just furthers her resolve
mm-hmm.
because she's starting to see who he really is. Like she's actually finally starting to acknowledge who he really is, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
No, and I think it could like sort of set that up really beautifully.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. Like to kind of like establish it a bit more and to make sense of why she was with him in the first place. That also kind of bothered me. Like, I mean, I know with abusers, they need to be charming, but he should have been more charming and manipulative at the beginning so you understand where she's coming from.
And that's where that first act is all about, is sort of showing how this visit to this island or living on this island has sort of rekindled what she saw him in the first place. But mm-hmm. it starts to revert back to what it was before they came to the island.
Yeah, well, a lot of the point of this movie is the cyclic nature of abuse as well.
Yes.
And that happens in real life where the abused continuously go back to this person because it's all they know. And mm-hmm. the fear of having that change is what kind of drives them back into these abusive relationships over and over again. And that's where the strength of this movie lies, is in the truth of that and her having the capacity to escape from this. And this movie happens subconsciously before mm-hmm. she makes that a reality.
Yeah. We're in the movie with her standing over his dead body and a bloody knife in her hand.
Sure. Whoops. Oh, well, guess better go. He went too far. Oh no. She's standing over him with the bust of a brass monkey having bludgeoned him to death.
That would be even more fitting.
And then she spends the rest of her time in a mental asylum along with the writer and director of the original film.
Oh, she's sitting next to this guy's like, that's a great idea for a movie. We could do that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like going with the not perfectly happy ending, but it kind of undoes the whole healing nature of the movie, right?
Yeah. I still like the empty apartment, but when you say the reveal of the boxes, that's a really good one.
Yeah. Okay, let's move into some casting here, and let's see who could star in our new version, our fantasy remake for Jennifer of Tanya's Island. Sam, why don't you start us off?
Okay, my cast of two and my director.
Yeah, well, I mean, the full cast was five people, so.
Yeah, and I'm only casting the two leads because, I mean, and you can get a good mocap actor to play Blue. I mean, Andy Serkis is an obvious choice, but I didn't bother because there are other options out there. But for my Tanya, I went with Rashida Jones. I'm going a little bit older because I wanted the character to have been through this cycle of abuse for a long time. So I wanted somebody who's a little bit older because Rashida's in her late 30s, early 40s now. And my Lobo character is also of a similar age. I went with Chris Holden Reed. He was in the Canadian TV series Lost Girl. Most recently, people saw him in Umbrella Academy as one of the Swedish assassins. And then for my director, I did want a director who would be able to look at this from a woman's perspective. So I did go with Julia Ducournau, the director of Raw.
Okay.
I thought that she would bring an interesting perspective to it because she's obviously a little bit more of a horror, which does kind of feed into the psychological horror of the whole story.
Well, we can always have Tanya eat Lobo.
We don't know if we need to relate to cannibalism necessarily, but...
Well, it's not the first time she has done that.
Well, that's true. But because Raw was a metaphor for womanhood, and I think that this would be another great metaphor for her or analogy for her to sink her teeth into.
Yeah, and I think that's important with the director of this, who's going to be able to bring that female perspective of the nature of abuse and breaking that. And I do think that's very important in the person you have making this movie.
Yes, and that's why I leaned into her, because she's already established that she can handle the metaphorical story really, really well.
That's really good.
Yeah. Okay, Trish, what do you got?
Okay. So for me, I wasn't sure how to do this. I was at a standstill because I was just so angry.
How angry were you?
Pretty angry. So I started off with Blue, actually, because I'm like, I didn't know what else to do. And I cast Toby Kebbell, who's done some Planet of the Apes movies as well, in mocap. And I think he would be good.
Nice.
And
I thought about him.
Yeah. You know, he does some good stuff. And for Tanya, I went with Kerry Washington. Because I like this. And plus, she's been stuck in a stupid relationship with the president on Scandal. And she doesn't need this anymore. and for Lobo, I went with Armie Hammer. Because I think he can do, like, Entitled Jerk really well.
Nice.
He has done Entitled Jerk really well.
Yes. And then for my director, Karen Kusama, who did The Invitation. Because she could do that kind of foreboding, is this real, is this not, type of deal.
Nice, nice. Okay, for my casting, I went with Zoe Kravitz as Tanya.
I knew you were going to do that.
Why? You're the one who always casts Zoe Kravitz.
I'm not the only one. I've only cast her twice.
She's quite good.
She's quite good.
Yeah. I was actually thinking Zoe Saldana as well, but I'm like, I use her a lot. So
Yeah. And we've seen her in such a action-y stuff that to buy her in this relationship might be a little tough. So yeah, Zoe Kravitz still establishing herself, and I think this would be a decent vehicle for her. For Lobo, I went with a slightly older Ethan Embry. With the combination of ideas, because I really liked his character in Devil's Candy, where he was an artist, but he also played this guy who was very charming and then wound up becoming very abusive in the pilot Masters of Horror episode.
I remember that one. He terrified me. He did so good in that role.
Yeah. So it was the combination of the two. I'm like, yeah, I can see him as Lobo in this.
I like that a lot.
That's brilliant.
Now, I did cast Mike Kelly, who was the TV studio person, mainly because I wanted to use her as this informed character. And my Kelly is also my director. This is a little thing I've picked up while I was in film school. Sometimes the director will appear in a film as an informed character, a character that has more information than they probably should naturally. And I thought this might be a good place for her. Now, Kelly could be our psychologist at the end or whatever, but I went with Anna Biller from The Love Witch.
Nice.
And okay. She knows how to use vibrant colors, and I'd like to see her utilize that in the way we've talked about in an artistic fashion, because she has a great eye for that kind of detail and this power of femininity. I can't say that word.
Femininity.
It sounds the same. I'm hearing it. It sounds the same, but it doesn't sound right. But anyway, she clearly knows, has that perspective in the Love Witch. So yeah. I thought she'd be good here. And, she's an actress in her own right. So to use her in this informed character perspective, I thought would be really cool. In a very similar fashion with Blue, I went with, Terry Notary, who played Rocket in, the Planet of the Apes movies, more recent ones.
Nice.
Nice. So I thought of Toby Cabell as well. So we were on the same similar page.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and since you're talking about Anna Biller, this made me think. I'm like, you know what? If we're doing this, I wouldn't mind if have Anna Biller take her hand at like making this look like an 80s film as well.
And why not? Why not?
Because that would be cool.
Well, I mean, if we're playing dream sequences and stuff, moving it from an uninformed, because it does look very grindhouse and a throwback from the 70s, vestiges of the 70s, I would like to see it progress from grindhouse to modern cinema.
Nice. And you could have all the, like, the time anachronisms,
mm-hmm.
where there's objects there that probably shouldn't be there, like if you think it's this certain time frame.
Oh, like Game of Thrones and the
coffee cup?
The coffee cup.
Yeah, but on purpose. Yes.
But you know, it's like sometimes you have a dream and it's really weird and there's stuff that's there that doesn't belong there.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's completely out of place.
Well, there were times where this movie did it, where the first time Blue comes into the camp and he's out there and he's really terrified. So he's just hugging his bow and his heavy gun, which never winds up using again.
Yeah. Oh, can we talk about the fact that he has a military helmet?
Yeah.
What's
like a World
that?
War One army helmet.
Yeah. I just happened to pack that.
Yeah. So, and I would get rid of the whole coconut throwing scene, I think. I think that I would have Blue now strong enough to start tearing down the walls of the fortress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then that's where he ends up sort of imprisoning himself.
I wouldn't
Tanya.
Even mind something similar, but as Lobo's slow to become more animalistic. I kept making note of him eating bananas, something we never see Blue do. And I'm like, hey, if he just starts tossing fruit over the, I'm like, the fact that the coconuts rained down so hard that it was blocking the door of the cage, the only thing that actually had a roof. I thought that was kind of silly. And then the door had been ripped off, and then Blue had locked Lobo into that cage.
By just throwing the door at it.
By just throwing the door at it. But suddenly Lobo's locked in.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing holding it there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would almost want to see like a physical battle between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because Lobo has deteriorated to being very primal.
Oh, well, but it wouldn't even be much of a battle if her psyche has made Blue into something large and powerful by the end of that movie.
Yeah,
exactly. And I mean, I think that there does need to be that physical confrontation instead of her locking that away. I think that she metaphysically needs to kill it.
Yeah. Well, we need to see it like him cowering away from it and him becoming that submissive and falling prey to this thing.
Exactly. But it has to be a little more impactful than it was, because it was rather anticlimactic.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Before we lead into that embrace and see her absorb that strength into herself permanently.
Yeah, well, it is her confidence that is facing off against the aggressor and taking her power back. So, yeah, that's a physical manifestation of her mentality. Yeah. So, yes, we do need to have that confrontation.
Have the confrontation, but you could also have the two where like it ends with Lobo being caged. Mm-hmm. And the whole point is like, Lobo, you're caged by your own problems. Mm-hmm. This is you. You're going to be stuck here forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you're right. You can never kill your insecurities. You can just lock them away and not let them control you anymore. I actually like that visual, actually.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the last visual we should have as we pull out into reality of her recounting this and then the doctor explaining what this is and to take her back her life or whatever. But that should be the pullout as that scene is tight and then pushed out. We're literally leaving the island.
Yeah.
Nice.
And floating away into a waking state.
No, I like that. I think that's a really great way to end it. And it emphasizes the point so nicely without saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives us that healing moment that we want so that at the end it's like we feel we've gotten through what we need to get through.
And we get a sense of purpose from the film that we didn't get from the original.
Yes.
Yeah, because it should end in a moment of peacefulness again as she's come to terms with herself rather than this moment of violence at the end that nothing's changed.
Yeah.
She's just traded one abuser for another. She rejects them both and then her character, her dream character is killed for it.
Yeah, it's
so depressing.
It was, especially after sitting through the whole thing and going, okay, well, maybe we're going to see something happen here that's a positive thing. And no, it was the Prince of Darkness ending.
Yes.
Okay, well, any last thoughts on Tanya's Island? Never.
It's
again.
A shame. That's all I got to say. It's a shame. There was a lot. This was a story with a lot of potential that wasn't executed well, and it didn't. I mean, $1.4 million. They had the budget, really. In 1980, they should have been able to produce a much better film than they did.
Mm-hmm. I would love to read about what the background on the making of this movie was and why it looks the way it does, and why you have such an expensive gorilla and everything else looks like shit. There's so little. There's almost nothing written about this movie because nobody gives a shit about this movie. It is it's not even a footnote. Is like, okay, yeah, Vanity was in this. Yeah, that was it. Vanity was in this. It's a footnote. It's footnoted even in her life. Unfortunately, her real life was far worse than her acting career.
Yeah.
Yeah, and her acting career got better. I mean, she was in some middling good films. I mean, 52 Pickup and Barry Gordy's Last Dragon, which is one of my favorite movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's unfortunately her demons got the better of her for a good hunk of her life. And I mean, she did certainly try to make a change near the end. And had turned to away from these type of films and turned to God, born again Christian. But I mean, when you spend a good decade of your career partying and addicted to crack cocaine, I was shocked when I heard that. But I mean, had a string of rock star boyfriends and then had married an abusive football player who she wound up divorcing. But after she divorced this former Oakland Raider, he was arrested for domestic violence with somebody else and then convicted of 3 murders.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. No wonder she had a vast change in her life and unfortunately had passed away at the age of 57, I want to say, same year as Prince.
Yeah, she was
four months apart.
Yeah, from liver failures.
From all the drug abuse.
Yeah, that's the terrible thing. It's like sometimes your life, it's so much is taking a toll on your body. And it's like you might be just at the moment where you're ready to like, oh, no, now I can start my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't get to.
Yeah, you can just, or the fresh start on the life. And I
feel like that this whole movie is kind of a metaphor for what her life kind of was.
Ultimately ended up being, which is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think that's. This was not the most enjoyable watch, but there was something really good in the core there that we were obviously able to expound upon and maybe come up with something that was maybe a little more watchable.
Yeah, it prompted a very deep and serious discussion about abuse and how we can convey that message better in a film that I think was trying to do so, ultimately kind of undid its message at the end, unfortunately. Thank you, Jennifer Miller, for recommending this to us. I do have to question this is one of your favorite movies, but I'm just assuming you like bad movies. Like you recognize that they're bad and enjoy them for their faults.
I hope so.
I hope that's the case.
You know what was funny is I didn't know what I was going to say until we kind of got to this, because at one point I was just trying to blue sky anything to like help me get through this movie. So I was like blue sky. Well, maybe it's like a shark man and Lobo goes spearfishing and the shark bites off his arm and he He dies bleeding out on the beach. But then at night, like, it's a were-shark. Like, he can come in and be a man when there's a full moon. And then the rest of the time he spends in the ocean.
That's a whole nother story.
That's a different movie, but I like it.
It is a different movie. But yeah, like, the were is him being a man. He's a were-man. But he's a shark.
That would be the sequel to the original Chinese Island, because she didn't learn anything in the first movie.
There we go.
And her dreams are getting more fucked up.
Yeah. Maybe that's my dream. My dream is that I meet a shark that turns human every full moon.
Yeah. Well, this is the last. Well, we might still be able to sneak in another fan challenge before the end of the year, but this is the last one before we get into All the Horror. All the Horror is a huge crossover event that happens between many podcasts over the 31 days of October, 31 horror-themed podcasts dropping every single day in the month of October. And you can follow at AllTheHorror18 on Twitter to find out which podcasts are dropping which days, as well as on Instagram and Facebook. They're just All the Horror on those. And they actually have a website as well, Sam.
It is allthehorror18.wixsite.com/event. And yeah, there's, I think we're up to 36 or 37 podcasts this year. We have double features planned already.
Nice. So lots of content is going to be dropping every single day. We'll have 4 horror-themed episodes, as we usually do in October, with a couple of episodes, our remaking episodes, having some special guests from the All the Horror crossover. So really looking forward to that. There's also some great new All the Horror merch over on TeePublic. All those sales support the charity Scares That Care. So show that you care and show that you love to scare by buying a t-shirt or a mug or a mask off of their TeePublic store. All the proceeds go to a good cause.
And it's the best way to donate, because it's not like you're just handing money out. You spend some money, you get something really fun and cool that you can wear or show off, and then a charity benefits. I think that's, and that was the whole approach, is like, well, let's not just ask people to give money. Let's give them something in return. So that, and that's how we've approached it.
Yeah. And you know, if you don't want to buy something, but you do want to donate it, then donate directly to Scares That Care as well. Mm-hmm. That's cool too. That's
absolutely,
you
yes.
know, if nothing else, you get a tax receipt.
Absolutely.
But hey, we've got our own TeePublic store.
Yes.
And we give this one out, this show out, free to you every single week for years now at the cost of my own pocket. So if you buy something off of our store, you are helping keeping Invasion of the Remake going for years to come. And we have some really cool designs up there. We just launched the Angry Fish line.
Mm-hmm.
And very cool designs by Sam of Angry Fish
so
in his historic movies. They are so cool. And you're going to really want to wear those out and about.
Awesome.
On these cool parody shirts. And of course, we have 31 Days of Horror coming up. And we've already got the I Survived 31 Days of Horror shirts there. And those are really cool. If you do 31 Days of Horror with us, the 31 Days of Horror Challenge, what that is we watch 31 horror movies over 31 days that we've never seen before. And then we're going to tell you about it in early November. But if you do it along with us, I think you deserve that shirt. So go hit up TeePublic and grab one of those shirts in 3 amazing designs. Again, by our own Sam Snepanenko.
Yes.
Yay. Yeah, I do stuff.
He's a design machine. Does. So yeah, join us in that challenge. And if you are joining us for the 31 Days of Horror Challenge, drop us your lists when you're done, and we will try to read a few of them out on the air when we record those episodes. Because, you know, we'd like to share. We like to share.
Mm. Plus, it's nice to hear other people's lists, because sometimes it'd be like, I don't know what to watch. And if I find out what somebody else is watching, I'd be like, ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
So we'll, for next year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it won't help us this year, but it might help us next year.
Yes.
And maybe, you never know, there might be something on there we think might even be worthy of its own episode.
Yes.
Or you can make a fan challenge just like Jennifer did this week. And the way you can do that, you can make a challenge over on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, or you can give us a nice long form letter over at our email address, invasionoftheremake@gmail.com.
Or you can fill out the contact form on our website.
Oh, I didn't even know about that. Man, you're secretly doing stuff. You do stuff. Sam, that's your t-shirt.
I'm Sam. I do stuff.
Yeah, that really is kind of me, isn't it?
I love it. That's the new shirt for sure.
Okay, you do that one, Trish.
Okay, I'm Sam. I do stuff. I have you as your just your head, but a Swiss Army knife.
Sadly, that's only going to be able to sell to people named Sam, but.
Yeah, possibly, but I'm sure we know a few Sams.
Hey, they did vanity keychains with people's names on them. Were the biggest thing for the longest time. Why not a shirt?
There you go. Another way you can support the show is telling your friends about the show. Tell them where to find us. Of course, we're in a ton of different places, and you can find a nice full list of that over on our Wix site, Sam.
It is invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
All our episodes are there with links, and there's a page just full of updates of where you can find the show. But we're on all your favorite podcast platforms at this point, so just seek us out. We're in places like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, but so much more. So no excuses. You can find us literally everywhere, except for YouTube now. I mean, we do have our YouTube channel. It's still there, but we've moved that to clips of episodes because shit happens. YouTube's necessitated that move has had to happen, but it's also given me a chance to have some fun and do some editing that I haven't had a chance to do on this show. So yeah, got to play with some vocal effects and stuff for intros of that episode. So yeah, I had a lot of fun making the clips for OK Connery, and we'll have you've probably already heard the next one after that. So that's what we're going to use YouTube for now. But if you just want to get a taste of this show, that's a good place to do it. Nice. If you want to say, hey, tell somebody to join our YouTube channel. And if you like the little bits we're putting up there, then the whole episode is out there for you to indulge in and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So are you guys ready? Are you ready for All the Horror next week? We start recording our All the Horror episodes. I'm so excited.
Yes.
I actually am. Unfortunately, we're doing the first episode before 31 Days of Horror actually starts. And this is one I haven't seen, or I don't think I've seen. So I don't get to count it, unfortunately. But I always try not to count the episodes we do for, or the movies we do for our episodes anyhow.
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Yeah. I mean, out of what I've got scheduled, no, there's very little I haven't seen. So by the time we usually hit like August, I'm already getting itchy to do horror movies and watch some horror stuff. So in preparation, I've been watching some of the last season's American Horror Story because I hadn't watched last season yet. So that's just to kind of moisten the palate, as it were, before we get into our 31 Days of Horror. But now we get to do some cool stuff, some darker stuff now. And that will continue probably for the next 6 or so weeks. Generally, we'll do our All the Horror episodes, and then we'll do our 31 Days of Horror specials in there. So we're looking at the next 6 weeks or so of horror. So hopefully you'll get into the spirit of Halloween and join us with that, especially with the way this year's been. I don't know if anybody's going anywhere, so you can really enjoy some of the scares and share with us by watching those movies along with us before you listen to the episode.
But think of all the costumes that have masks on them.
That's true.
I mean, really, this Halloween writes itself.
It does. It does. Everybody's going to look like they're coming out of a Purge movie. Yeah. I hope, anyway. I mean, God knows we've had a year that feels like it. It's not just one day. Like, Purge was supposed to be one damn day.
Right?
I didn't know it was going to last all year long. Or 4 years. Good Lord. Good Lord.
I always wondered, the Purge movies, what they should do, and this would be the funniest thing, is have Purge, but like have it like early February. Just make it one of the coldest days of the year.
Yeah.
And see how many people really want to do shit. Because you have to brave the cold.
I support that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll catch you guys next week as we begin All the Horror. And I don't know, hopefully Jeff will be back from his treasure hunt by then. Until then, I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Make me feel like an animal. How would you like it if my body was covered with hair? Huh? What was it like with you and him in the cave?